Tatiana Harrison, Director of Voice of Youth, here to introduce your weekly 59-minute dose of teen culture, thought, and inquiry. Our youth decided to tackle a big topic this week, the midterm election. Usually, the hosts start with a term of teen slang and define it with real-world examples. They worked backwards this time, analyzing the election event to find some suitable slang that could sum it up. Their challenge? To take this topic, so prominent in the headlines, yet as we found so desperately divorced from most teens' daily reality, and really bring it home, reflecting an honest, diverse youth perspective on the whole kit and caboodle, to use some very non-current phrasing, from ballot initiatives to Senate seats, from Tennessee mudslinging to Virginia cliffhangers. The hosts, LaKoya, 20 years old, and Amanda, 16, actually turned out enough material to split between two nights. So this evening, we bring you the first installment of our quest to translate the ideas and ideals of American politics into the everyday language and concepts of American teenagers. A first installment that includes an interview with a winning city council candidate, a teen sex ed activist. But before I get ahead of myself, Election 06, Part 1, hosts, take it away.
Welcome to our show. I'm your host, LaKoya Simmons, and this is your official Voice of Youth election recap.
And I'm your fellow host, Amanda Wells. We are missing our third host, Mr. Greg Shimada, but never fear, he'll be back next week.
Usually, we're here as a dictionary with a specific word or phrase to define. But today is a little more like an odyssey, a journey to try and find the right youth terms to capture this political moment, to try and relate politics to the everyday talk that goes on at the quad during lunch in MySpace messages or late night phone calls in the world we live in.
Because yes, the big buzz this week is politics. At least it's supposed to be. The big headlines are yelling out about Rumsfeld's resignation, the Democrats taking the House and the Senate, the nail-biter in Virginia, measures and propositions that won and lost. But how can we understand and truly relate to these?
We found a lot of our friends didn't exactly care, didn't even understand the issues or the basic government terms, like the Senate.
But don't just take our word for it. We, plus a cameo from Greg, called up some folks to try and get them to give us their words for the election. And here's a sample of what we got.
Yo. The first question, what happened on election day and the day after for you and for the country?
I don't know, yo.
What did you do and what did the country do?
I'm not sure, yo.
All right. How would you break down the outcome of election day for you personally and politically? Well, you smoke cigarettes, right?
Indeed.
So, do you know what happened on the cigarette tax?
Supposedly, trying to raise it up to somewhere $7 a pack or some shit.
And how would that affect you?
It would affect my pocket considerably.
All right, so what is being left out of political discussion, do you feel?
Medical marijuana.
And what do you feel about medical marijuana?
I think it should be legalized and or taxed. That funding could probably be used for schooling in California, considering we have a pretty low standard for schooling.
So you're for the kids and for marijuana?
Indeed.
Hello?
Hey.
Hey.
Okay. So, first question, what happened election day and the day after?
This year, on election day, people, I should hope, went out to vote. I was not one of them. Spent all day working at the Clove, and I had to literally push some crazy homeless guy out of the store with a broom. He kept coming in at me telling me about Osama bin Laden owning the government, and I'm like, get out! Get out! The day after election, I had a nasty burrito for breakfast that kind of gave me heartburn. And I'm really hoping that the votes turned out in a way that would have benefited my beliefs. Like, as if I had voted anyway. I can hardly hear you because somebody's got a siren going. Man, that's loud! Can you hear that?
Yeah.
That's vicious.
This is Rick. Yeah.
Okay, I didn't know if I had the right number. Where are you right now?
I'm in Santa Rosa, California.
And what does it look like outside where you are?
A little windy. It looks like there's some overcast coming in.
Can you tell us a little bit about if there's anything that you know that happened Election Day?
I don't know a whole lot that actually happened this Election Day, except there was a couple important things on the ballot.
And what are your feelings on the smart train issue?
As of right now, like if it was to go into completion and be done, let's just say tomorrow, there really wouldn't be a whole lot of people riding that train. And the study said that it wouldn't really decongest the freeways either. So,
yeah.
Now, in the future, as it progresses and as more trains start running and as they start putting day trains on it, then it might start freeing up the freeway a little bit. But
so I heard you say earlier that you didn't know too much about the elections and stuff. So I take it that you didn't vote?
No, I didn't vote.
And why didn't you vote?
I didn't vote because in the state of California, if you are on parole or if you're a felon fresh out of prison or something like that, you don't have the opportunity to vote. So that's my case right now.
Do you think that's fair?
First of all, the type of people that are fresh out of the penitentiary, probably their last concern is to be voting in any type of election. And actually, to be honest with you, yeah, you know what? I don't think that's a very just rule because just because somebody has committed a crime doesn't mean that that person shouldn't be eligible to vote. Oh.
Is there anybody, because I know you yourself didn't vote, but any of your friends or family, did they vote, or was there anything like topics or issue that they were talking about?
No, I think the last thing on the people's minds of a lot of people I associate with is probably the election.
What's on their minds? What would you say would be more on their minds?
Survival, I would think, you know, trying to make that next rent and trying to make a little money to maybe get a little ahead. I don't know a lot of people in, quote unquote, the hoods or nothing that I know of that actually vote, you know, it seems like a waste of time.
So what are some issues that maybe you would want to see people voting on that would more affect us?
Low income housing and money allocated to libraries and education. So I think that that would be a big thing to change if anybody wants to listen.
So we heard a few brief conversations to begin our journey. And today's show is really sort of a series of longer conversations aimed at trying to wrap our heads around what's going on, to try and bridge what seems to be very divided worlds. The first conversation is a sit-down we had with a youth who just started up here at Voice of Youth. On his very first day, we got him in the studio to give us an average teen take on the issues. Here are some excerpts of our pre-election talk. So, what were your first memories of politics?
When I was 4 years old, I went to one of the presidential election things with my mom. I just remember going into that little curtain thingy.
So you went to vote with your mom, or your mom was voting and you
went
with
her? My mom was voting. I went with her.
Who do you want to be governor of California?
I don't really care because I don't know what he does.
What do you think he does? Or what would you expect him to do?
Spend our money.
What do you think he should spend money on?
Education.
Really? Are you just saying that? Or do you really?
No, because our schools are kind of run down a little bit. We need new books. That's about it.
What things do you think need to be, like, yeah, paid attention to, like, in California? Like, what are problems that
our
you have
highways.
What's the problem with that?
They got potholes all over.
And that makes you mad or something?
Yeah, because it wakes you up when you're in the car and it hurts if you're not feeling good.
So do you think, like, the way you're brought up and, like, what around you has influenced kind of this opinion? Like, your family and your teachers?
Not really. Like, I don't really hang out with people that are into government stuff. They don't really care about it, so I guess I don't.
Do you ever, like, wonder, though, like, in the back of your mind, are you just, like, different?
Sometimes I wonder about, like, if we had a different president, what it would be like.
What's your ideal of, like, a presidency, an ideal presidency?
I like the one we have right now.
You do?
Yeah.
What do you like about it?
I like that, I don't know, I just think he's doing a good job.
And how's he doing a good job?
My family tells me they do a good job.
So your family, is influencing you on politics.
Yeah, because like, they're the only person I have to look up to about politics.
Yeah. Because and when they say he did a good job, like what are the things that they're talking about?
Well, because I support him for like going into Iraq and stuff.
Yeah. And do you support
him? Yeah, I do. From my own personal beliefs.
And what?
We can't let nothing happen like about 9/11. We gotta do something about that.
Yeah.
So that's the reason why I support him for this stuff.
What if your cousin like died or something? Fighting for that, would you feel the same, do you think?
Yeah, I'd feel like they need to be punished more.
Because your cousin died?
The people in Iraq? Because
it's like they're
Iraq?
Taking one of your family members.
But so. In reality, the people in Iraq didn't take your family members, your own country did. Because your own country sent them off to fight.
Yeah, but my own country didn't kill them. They're not the one that pulled the trigger.
So you look at it like that?
Yeah. I look at it for who actually did it.
Yeah. That's interesting because I look at it like what's the cause, you know?
So what do you think is the difference between a Democrat and a Republican?
One's conservative in their thoughts and the other is more liberal.
What's so, conservative yeah, which is and which? Liberal to you?
Well, like...
Give us the definition.
To me, like, conservatives aren't for gay rights, aren't for support wars and stuff. Then liberals are the opposite.
What is the reason, do you think, that they support the war? This and that?
Well, I think they support it because it will bring us more money with the oil and stuff. And then I think they also just support it because...
Their party?
The president's doing it, so...
So, to kind of get back to this election, what are some signs or measures? Do you know what a measure or proposition is?
Yeah.
So, what are some of the ones that you have heard about?
I think it's Prop 87. I think that's the cigarette one, but I'm not sure.
What is Prop 87?
Well, I don't know if it's Prop 87, but the tobacco one. Mm. Like, a lot of people I know are against that.
And what is the tobacco one?
It's where they're going to raise... taxes on all tobacco products.
But cigarettes kill too, and you don't want your friends to die, right?
They're gonna die either way, so they might as well enjoy life while they're alive.
So killing yourself is enjoying life though?
Just by living is killing yourself though, because you're gonna die anyway.
So but you just want to speed up the process or what?
I think it like if you smoke a cigarette, it relaxes you and stuff. It's an enjoying experience.
But if you, like, take a bath, that relaxes you too.
What are some other...
We were talking about the measures and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Is there any other ones that you heard about?
Yeah, Prop 85, the abortion. Where
the kids
teens have to notify parents or parents have to be notified. I don't think they should have to be notified. Because I think some parents might hurt their kid or get really pissed at the kid for having sex in the first place.
Yeah. And how did you hear about that properly?
School. We did a couple assignments on them.
What about the... I think that they're trying to pass something about banning smoking like in public areas.
Oh, yeah!
How do you feel about that?
I think you should be able to smoke wherever you want.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you're just hurting yourself.
But you're not, though, in a public place. Where
don't blow
in
the other person's face.
Just because you blow it in their face, though, doesn't mean they can't inhale it, you know?
If they don't like it, they can move along. I think people should be able to enjoy themselves where they want.
So what's that? So look, but what about the person that doesn't smoke and just wants to sit there and enjoy themselves?
They're not able to enjoy themselves? They can leave.
So it's only right for the smoker to enjoy themselves.
Yes, so. You're too smart. This is horrible.
All right, so any last shout-outs? What about your cousins over there in Iraq?
All right. I'll send a shout-out to my cousin Robert in Baghdad. Be safe and come home soon.
From KRCB's Voice of Youth, we're coming out of an interview that you just heard with me, myself, my fellow co-host Amanda, and another youth, Albert. A lot of the things that were shared really struck me because, you know, it's sometimes weird and a little bit awkward to sit down and talk with someone that has different views or opinions than you.
Yes, one of the things I noticed, especially about one of the propositions, the cigarette tax, was how both of you had very logical ways to come to the conclusion that you did, with you, LaKoya, being against it and Albert being for it. And it made me think of the politicians who have to kind of take their people into consideration, the people who are voting for them, mm-hmm. Regardless of kind of their own opinions, or finding a way to either find voters who agree with them or balance their own opinions with the people who are voting for them to get enough support.
Yeah. And you might notice he said his teacher in school was a main source of information and opinion for him. Well, we found one of those teachers.
Actually, one of my teachers, Mr. Kettenberg, who teaches government and economics at Maria Curro High School.
We needed to get brushed up on our basics of politics, and he gave us an earful. He also gave some insight as to why maybe people like me who aren't voting should get voting. I don't vote because I feel that my vote doesn't get counted, and I don't feel that I'm very comfortable with the whole process of the Electoral College. Let's take a listen.
Hello?
Hi, is Mr. Kettenberg around?
Speaking.
Oh, hi, this is Amanda.
Hi.
Can you tell us what Election Day was like for you and what you did during the day?
Well, I taught class during the day, but during the day, news filters in, usually via students, of the returns that are happening on Election Day.
And what was it like? Can you just describe, like, maybe some conversations that you were overhearing?
The majority of the students that are in my class are liberal, Democrat-leaning, so they, of course, were joyous in the returns that they were seeing.
So what exactly happens, like, in Congress, in the House, in the Senate? What is that, and what do they represent? What laws? Like, say, for instance, me, you know, a young adult, how do they have a direct effect on my life?
Well, on your life, at the federal level, even though people pay a lot of attention to the federal level, there actually isn't such a direct result on your life. You could look at a few hot-button things, like, say, if you're male and you're looking at the draft.
Like, the war, I feel, for me, doesn't personally affect my life because, like, I'm not in it, you know? But there is, like, for instance, my boss at work, her son is in the war. My uncle's in the war. Like, pretty much, like, a handful of my friends, like, either they know somebody or their family member is involved in the war somehow, some way. And I was just wondering if you could kind of just clarify if this election has anything to do kind of with Iraq, and if it does, what is that exactly?
Well, in any democracy, one of the things with the armed services is whatever they're involved in, they're going to have to have a certain amount of support of the public. If it was a totalitarian system, the totalitarian system wouldn't look so much towards the public for their support. They would just simply say, that's what we're going to do. So the politics of it is just simply, do the people support or not support a certain policy? Now, the constitutionality of the whole issue is what Congress has already approved. They've given the president, who is commander-in-chief of the armed forces, the latitude to do what he wants to do. So then they would have to turn around and begin to restrain that through the changing of the permission they gave him to go into Iraq in the first place.
Me, myself, I don't vote. And I feel like I don't vote because I don't know exactly, like, where my vote is going or if it's truly going to be counted for anything. And the whole, like, electoral college, that process and stuff, it kind of just bothers me. What would you say to, like, people like me that aren't voting?
Not voting and you're complaining, then you're probably giving up a part of what you can do. Mm-hmm. Now, could your part be canceled out? Yeah. In a democracy, in any democracy examined, there is a certain amount of lost votes in the system. But that might be more egotistical on our part to think that our particular vote was lost in 3% shuffle, and things didn't go our way, because in a democracy, things aren't going to go your way. Usually it's more compromised than it's exact. It's more gray than it is black and white. And then the complexity of the issue is always a problem. The answer to anything on the ballot is, if you don't know anything about it, you don't have to vote on it.
Oh, that's interesting.
What you do is you focus on
what you
things that matter
on.
To you.
Okay.
So can you give us kind of a definition of what politics means, or what it would mean in this election? Like, are the Democrats and Republicans trying to compromise? Like, the idea that they put up conservative Democrats?
Well, I certainly think that the Democrats couldn't move themselves into position, if you were looking at them 2 years ago, had they not started looking at moving themselves further towards the conservative side. So the Republicans had actually caused the middle of the political spectrum to shift in the last two elections. And so if there was going to be any survival on the Democratic part 2 years ago, that's what they would have been thinking about. They would have been thinking, well, maybe we have to pay more attention to the religious right. Maybe we have to pay more attention to conservative values that these voters seem to be going at.
And does it, I mean, is it like kind of like a game? Because what I'm getting is, like, I figure, like, the politics is kind of just all about money. You know what I mean? If you have the money, you can win, you know? Is it kind of like that? Or is it just...
Well, is it a game? Sure, it's a game. Politics is the glue that keeps people together. It's the same game a family plays when a younger sibling thinks that they control an older sibling by saying they're going to tell their mother on them on something that they did. That's all the same kind of politics that is going on there.
Yeah.
It just becomes a more advanced game with more complex rules and more money being played in it. However, it's also the public that's playing the game too, because as they vote, it's not that they're not unaware that the politicians are using a lot of money, and a lot of the money is coming from corporations, and that they're going to nod the way of the corporations. And at the same time, it's not, you know, what's the examination on the corporations? Are they always evil and everything that they do is evil, or are they, after all, they employ all these people who pay all the taxes? So everything is more connected together than separated apart in that.
In your classes that you teach and things like that, what are some of the issues about the election or about the government in general that the kids have a hard time understanding? And do you have any ways of, like, explaining this better, like metaphors or things like that?
It really depends on what grade level or age level you're working with. And this isn't just students in a high school or junior high school setting. This goes, like, just right up the line, is what kind of metaphors you're going to use for them to understand something, because you have to understand how it is they're attempting to understand, what level they're coming from. And when you first start off, you tend to come from trying to see things in black and white, when in fact, when you're dealing with people and how people group together and how they're going to make rules about themselves and how they're going to follow rules about themselves, it's more gray than it is black and white. And what I usually try to do is actually just use examples of something. So if you use the example of something that catches most people's attention, which would be rules about murdering one another or killing one another, the further you go down in grade levels, the more black and white they'll be about that. If you say, if somebody kills somebody else, should they be punished? And then how far should the punishment go? Should it go all the way to killing that individual? They will have a tendency to want to say it goes all the way to killing the individual. But when you say, okay, your mother drives a car around the corner and somebody steps out in front of him and she kills him, is that the same as if somebody pulls a gun out and shoots somebody else? And so then they begin to see that actually it's the degrees of murder and why we actually have made rules about different degrees of murder. And that's true for any set of rules that any set of people put together. So something old like the Constitution is full of rules, but there's full of rule changes too, known as the amendments, where things have been changed in the actual Constitution. It allowed slavery. It doesn't allow slavery anymore. It one time wanted to stop everybody from drinking alcohol. It decided that wasn't going to work, and it struck that down. So, you know, that becomes the complexity of it, is that rules change. Everything changes because people change, like language changes. When you're you go from one generation to the next.
Or area to area.
Yeah, exactly. So it's really that tendency to want a really black and white explanation for life when life really has a lot more gray zones to it.
You're listening to Voice of Youth from Carisbee and Santa Rosa. We are dropping all kinds of knowledge on you about this year's election. We've talked to a teen, a teacher, and now, drumroll please,
dun, dun, dun.
A winning candidate. We invited in the studio Ms. Susan Gorin, who was just elected to the Santa Rosa City Council.
Council member-elect Gorin has already done a lot of work in the community, from serving as a planning commissioner to a Santa Rosa school board member. We got her views about her new gig and politics in general.
Hi, I'm Susan Gorin, and you might know that I've just been elected to the Santa Rosa City Council. I've lived in Santa Rosa for about 24 years. I moved here with my husband, Joe, and our two young daughters.
So how is Election Day for you?
Oh, Election Day was exhausting, exhilarating, gratifying, all of those emotions rolled into one.
Take us from the time you wake up in the morning.
Yesterday, Election Day?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I should first back up because recognize that anybody who's considering running for office just doesn't wake up one morning and say, gee, I'm going to run for election. This is something that you really have to think about very carefully and decide whether or not you can recruit people to help you run for election. And in my case, I decided almost 2 years ago that I was going to run for election yesterday. During the first year, 2005, I attended so many neighborhood events, community events, out in the street talking to voters, talking to individuals in the community who I respected, who'd been very active on a number of issues, asking what they felt were the most important issues in the city, and whether or not they would consider supporting me for election. In the past year, since the past December, I've been very actively campaigning, getting a steering committee together, 12 to 15 individuals from various groups in the city, and an army of people who are telephoning on my behalf, precinct walking, sending emails, sending postcards, delivering signs.
So I hear you talking a lot about how you have to kind of work as a team effort, mm-hmm. and you said you had an army of people like behind you.
Exactly.
Why couldn't you just do that on your own? Do you need people to help you run? Do you need like people funding you or behind you? Why couldn't somebody just wake up one day and be like, I'm going to run for president or whatever you want to do, city council? Why couldn't they do that on their own?
In smaller towns such as Windsor and Rohnert Park, there are candidates that run and are successfully elected by either funding their own campaigns with a relatively small amount of money, $1,000 to $5,000, and they have been successfully elected. However, with Santa Rosa, one person cannot physically walk the entire city unless that's the only thing that you did. And you would probably have to start in January to walk the city because it takes probably maybe 12 to 14 hours for one person to walk a precinct when you ring doorbells.
What is a precinct?
A precinct. The city is divided up into smaller areas. And it's sometimes along the line of neighborhoods, but not necessarily.
You never took us through your day.
I never took you through my day. Yeah. I got off on a tangent. Well, my day yesterday was actually not working on voting. It was, I find it very satisfying and very relaxing to not really think about what's happening.
Yeah.
And so I spent the day sort of cleaning up the house, getting ready for the party, shopping, fixing all the wine and the soft drinks and the hors d'oeuvres.
But hold on, what? So you were just having a party not knowing that you were winning?
That's right.
So what if you weren't to win?
It's a real bummer of a party. And I have been to parties where it's not necessarily that I've given the parties, mm-hmm. but when I was running for election and I attended somebody else's mm-hmm. party and I didn't win. Fortunately, the person who gave the party did win. So I was really happy for her. Mm-hmm. As long as one person won, mm-hmm. and in fact, several candidates came over to my house last night. So it was, I sort of open up my house often on election night because I live fairly close to the Registrar of Voters office. And I have a large enough house to accommodate some people. And
so what, did people just keep you posted as far as what was happening with the results? Or
that's right. My husband would just get on the computer and then he'd come running down. Okay, we have new results. And then he would chart them on a graph and we could follow the results during the evening. But also we had a TV on the whole time, so we were watching the national election news as well as KRCB. And you really keep in touch, and it's just a fun evening where you can sit and chat and get excited or get depressed.
Yeah.
So what do you do as a member of the city council?
You are essentially part of a policy-making body. You formulate the policies that govern Santa Rosa. And you hire the city manager as well as the city attorney. So you are an employer as well. And it's the responsibility of the city manager to implement the policy that is established by the city council. And there are so many things, so many issues that the city council works on. In a typical meeting, the city council meets every Tuesday evening, four nights a month, from 4 o'clock to whenever the city council meeting ends. And in a typical meeting, you would have approval of the minutes from the previous meeting. You would have various consent items on there, talking about contract approval for paving the streets or employing a consultant to study an issue like traffic. But also you have some report items from staff, for example, how the money is going to be expended for Measure O. Or
can I interrupt you for a second and ask what Measure O is?
That's an excellent question, and it's a really good question, especially because it relates to young people. Measure O was a proposition passed by the voters, I think, 2 years ago in the last election, two years ago, November. And it allocated money, well, first of all, it authorized a sales tax. And from the money, it allocated a certain percentage, 40% for extra police, 40% for extra fire and equipment, and 20% for youth activities, really focusing on gang prevention activities.
Well, I was just going to say, to kind of wrap it up, I want to ask you a question about like your definition of politics, or not even a definition, but just like, what is it? Like, is it to like the parties trying to compromise to try and move forward, or is it like a battle, or what? How would you explain it?
Politics is always the art of compromise. I think the exciting thing that we see nationally is that we have had the Republicans dominate the Senate, representatives, and the presidency. And it hasn't produced compromise. And I think it's produced not very good policies because of that. I think we'll see now that the Democrats have retaken the House and the Senate that President Bush is going to have to work much harder at compromise with the Congress. Just as we see the re-election with Arnold Schwarzenegger, a Republican, working, I think, very successfully this year with a Democratic Assembly and Senate with the art of compromise, and has produced some significant policy achievements this year. So I think that the same thing is true at the local level. Although in our city councils and board of supervisors, it is nonpartisan, which means that we do not run proclaiming that we are Democrats or Republicans or Green Party or declined to state. We are a person. But it really is, in Santa Rosa's case, seven individuals representing different constituencies with different ideas about what kind of policies would benefit the city and our residents. And again, it's the art of compromise and negotiation and discussion. Well, you see it this way, I see it this way. Can we find a middle ground? Can we change the conditions of this project so that we can get more people to agree that this is what we should do?
Thank you.
So thank you for taking time out your night. We really appreciate it. And
you're
congratulations
welcome.
On your victorious win. And we just want to say that, you know, we hope you do good, and we're sure you will do good. And we'll be hearing a lot about you, I'm sure. And we'll be able to be like, yeah, we know her. We interviewed her. She's cool. This is Voice of Youth from KRCB in Santa Rosa. And you just heard one of Santa Rosa's new council members. We'll be sure to catch up with her later to see how things are shaping up in her new job. Any thoughts on some teen slang that could apply to her views?
Well, a lot of what she said kind of had to do with protecting, really, I thought she really protected kind of the youth's interest and thought about that we are the future. And so a word that kind of came to mind was lookout. And how she, not only in the sense of a noun that she is like a lookout because she's local and walking around all the precincts, but a lookout as a verb, like she's looking out for the youth and our interests and things like that. And also she was a lookout in the sense of herself and making sure she had enough support and money and things like that to be able to get her on the ballot and elected and things like that.
Yeah.
But this election wasn't all about electing people. There are measures and ballot initiatives galore. One issue, of course, that came up a lot in our conversations was that of abortion. Voters in South Dakota overturned a law passed by their legislator that would have made abortions almost totally illegal.
And here in California, voters gave thumbs down, barely, to a law that would require parents to be notified when their daughters were getting abortions.
These laws, and really everything we've been talking about today, are made by adults. But what about the younger generation coming up? The people who will be running in 5, 10, 20 years?
Well, we have a special treat along all those lines. An exclusive interview with Shelby Knox, subject of the politically charged, award-winning documentary, The Education of Shelby Knox.
Here's a little background in case you haven't seen the flick. Well, let's just say when we sat down to watch this documentary, we were surprised a lot by the world it took place in, Lubbock, Texas, with sky-high teen pregnancy and sexually transmitted infection rates, along with an abstinence-only sex ed policy.
One scene which stunned us in particular was a church-sponsored ceremony the young protagonist participates in, making an abstinence-only pledge under the direction of her Baptist pastor, who also does a sex ed presentation for the public schools. Let's hear a little from the ceremony in the film to give you a taste.
Students, just come up and make a straight line. What you're doing by coming up here and standing like this, you're going to make a commitment to God, number one, that you're going to live a sexually pure life. Number two, you're going to make a commitment to your parents, you're going to live a sexually pure life. Number three, you're making a commitment to your future husband or wife whom you've never met that you're going to live a sexually pure life. And number four, you're making a commitment in front of all these people that you're living a sexually pure life. That means you're making a commitment to the world. You know, people, don't take this lightly. Now, here's what we're going to do. I want you to look into the eyes of your parent. Declare the commitment that you're making before God, before your parents, before your future husband. Use those words.
And I commit to not have sexual relations with anyone until I'm married. And that is my personal commitment to God, to you, and to the man that I do not know yet, but that I will marry. And when I marry that man, that night will be our first time.
That was Shelby Knox at the beginning of the journey this documentary takes you on. By the time it's all over, she's coming to her own as a champion of comprehensive sex education.
LaKoya, myself, and Greg got a chance to ask her about this transformation, sitting in the projection area of the Rialto Theater, where her movie was being shown. let's roll some choice cuts of this talk.
What was the sex ed that you did receive in high school? I know, like, in your movie and everything, it was absence, but what does that mean? Like, what did people tell you or what happened at your school? Because I know at my high school or whatever, in my biology class, like, a lady from the Raleigh Street Clinic, which is a local kind of clinic we have here, came in and, like, showed us pictures of all the diseases and talked to us for a long time. Like, I know you didn't have anything like that, but what did you have?
We had a pastor who was hired by the public school to come in and teach about sex education, teach in quotation marks, because he would say things like, masturbation will make you a selfish lover and your partner might kill himself one day if you masturbate too much, that AIDS is a completely gay disease and if someone you know has AIDS, they're gay and they're going to die soon. And then he would always end his presentations with pulling out a toothbrush that looked like it had been scrubbed. Used to scrub toilets, and he'd pull a girl up on stage and say, would you brush your teeth with this? And she would always just wrinkle her nose and say, no, of course not. And he would say, well, you're the dirty toothbrush if you've had sex before marriage. And so that was sort of the things that went along in the Lubbock High Schools.
Don't you think that's like, isn't there supposed to be like some sort of like separation of church and state? Like, I don't know, I didn't really understand that part, because in California that would not like fly at all. People would be on that, like, there's no religion in school ever.
Well, it's a lot different in Lubbock, Texas than it is in California. They pray before the school board meetings. The city council sends out prayer requests on their email lists, and it wasn't really a big deal. The ACLU did threaten to sue, and at that point they decided that the PTAs needed to pay the pastor, but the PTAs were told, you know, you have to do this. And so it didn't really affect anything, but they were getting around the legal requirement of a separation of church and state.
I know in the movie I felt like there wasn't a lot about how you really got into this issue. Like, was there a moment where you just decided, like, oh, this is what I need to do? I know you were involved with the commission there, but what was it like actually? Like, what was like, oh, this is what I need to be doing now because it is the most important thing? Because you weren't really, like, it didn't really affect you, but the people around you. So how did you come to that decision?
Well, it was funny. It sort of started at the same time. I was in a math class at my high school, and there was this girl I sat with, and we hated math, and we would talk every day, and she was pregnant. But we didn't talk about that until one day she said, I'm really surprised you talk to me. And I said, why? And she said, well, so many people are mean to me and tell me I'm a slut and tell me I'm a terrible person for getting pregnant. And I thought that was terrible. And I asked her, you know, why didn't she use a condom and stuff? And she said, well, my boyfriend told me I couldn't get pregnant the first time. And I did. And it was just a sad lack of information. And she ended up being sort of forced into the special school that Lubbock has for pregnant girls. And so when I joined the Youth Commission and we started talking about issues, that was very much in the forefront of my mind. I mean, I go to school and see her every day, and I just started thinking about that and then looking around and realizing how many people were being affected and how many people I actually knew who had gotten pregnant or gotten an STI or something like that. What was very neat is that 3 years later, she came to the first screening in Lubbock and never knew that she had, like, been the inspiration for everything. And so it was a very, like, tearful and emotional reunion. But sadly, she had had another child and was having a difficult time. And so, you know, you can't help everyone. And it was very disheartening. And you know that Lubbock has a long way to go.
So I have kind of a question about how the movie was kind of developed and things like that. Like, can you tell us like a timeline of what happened? Because the documentary was really long, because I saw it. They're like your sophomore and then junior. Like, that's a lot of years to be having a camera follow you around. So what was that like? And what, like, when did you meet them and when did...
Okay, the filmmakers wanted to make a film on sex education. They had done a film with that subject matter before, a little bit of it, and they thought it would be great to find kids fighting for sex ed. And so they heard about Lubbock. They did not want to go to Lubbock, Texas, but there was nowhere else to go. And so they came. They started filming. The initial thing was, okay, we're going to follow you for 12 to 18 months. We'll edit for like a year, and then this movie will come out. And we're going to follow 5 people. It's not going to be a big deal. And then 3 years later, it came out at Sundance. So it was a crazy experience. They came for about a week every month for 3 years. And it was always intense and stressful and a lot of fun. I became fairly close friends with the filmmakers.
And so the documentary, the way that it turned out, was that your idea of how it was going to turn out? Like, what did you think this film was going to be?
I didn't know what the film was going to be, but I certainly didn't think it was going to be about me. In fact, I didn't know until about a year before it came out. We'd stopped filming, and I said, hey, what's the title going to be? And one of them said, yeah, we think we're going to call it The Education of Shelby Knox. And I was like, shut up, that's the worst title ever. You can't call a movie that. And they were just like, oh, okay, whatever. And then, like, a couple months later, they were like, well, maybe we should tell you that the movie's about you. So I didn't really know, and I was incredibly shocked. I was a little bit concerned because I was not, although I might have been one of the leaders, I was not the only person who was fighting for this, and so I felt very guilty about that. But then I also realized that someone needed to be a spokesperson for it, and this was going to get national attention, and so if a film could talk about sex education on a national level, it was going to be a positive thing, especially after I saw it and loved it.
How did your community kind of respond to the issues, and also your pastor? We saw a lot of the interaction between you two in the movie. Like, how was it when, like, not on camera or things like that? Or what were the things that we didn't really see on camera in the community?
Well, community reaction was surprising. 93% of parents across the United States want their kids to be taught comprehensive sex education. The vast majority of parents nationally and in Texas think that their kids are getting good sex ed in schools. And so a lot of parents were very surprised. They started talking to their kids. They started asking what they were learning. And I got a generally positive reaction. I did get some crazies who told me to go die or I was messing up Lubbock and things like that. But I got a mostly positive reaction. From the past, Pastor, sadly, no. He felt that I was really trying to hurt him and his career with this film. And on the day of my senior prom, he did a presentation and started talking about how there was a girl who was trying to ruin his career and his life and his livelihood, and that she should be ashamed of what she was doing. And so he kind of got to ruin my senior prom. He did it in front of the entire school, or the whole senior class, which was 600 of us. And he looked right at me while he was doing it, and everyone knew.
And how did that make you feel? Like, what was your reaction, you know? Because you like being a Christian, you know what I mean? And you're not really supposed to think bad of people and stuff like that. Because, I mean, people are always talking about, like, what they would do or, you know, how they, like, shoulda, coulda, wouldas, you know what I mean, after the fact and stuff. Or, like, if they say that they're, like, if they were ever faced with that problem, what they would do, you know? But nobody actually knows, like, until you're, like, in that situation, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So coming from, like, that background and stuff and having, like, your ideas, how did that make you feel and how was that, like pointed towards your reaction?
It was very hurtful to be rejected by the pastor in that way. He and I had a different view of Christianity. He saw it as intolerant. I saw it as very loving. And I guess I was going out into the world expecting to be loved and accepted by other Christians and other people. And so my reaction was to be hurt and then to get my friends to all stand up and walk out during his presentation.
Is that what happened?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
I mean, I was sitting with all my friends, and I said, you know, he's talking about me, and I'm not going to stay here, and whoever wants to come can come. And, you know, everyone around me just got up and left. So, and my brother, he continues to go to the same school district, and he refuses to go to the presentations. So,
how do you feel about our president, George Bush?
I disagree on almost all of his policies, all of them, I think. He's been incredibly bad for women. He's been incredibly bad for groups of color, for GLBTQ people. And I, as someone who calls myself a very liberal Christian, am incredibly offended that a political faction could take over what they see as a religion and claim that they have a mandate and they're going to rule with that. As a Christian, I find that disgusting.
So, and how does your dad feel about that?
Cool. my parents are strong Republicans. They really like George W. Bush. They think he's a great Texan. They think he's great for the country. And we have agreed to disagree. They watch Fox News. I watch CNN. I call theirs faux news, and they call mine Criminal News Network. And, you know, we try not to talk too much politics.
So, you know, being teens and everything, kind of the question throughout the whole movie and everything is, have you had sex? You know, that's kind of the question on everyone's mind whenever they're thinking about it. What do you, can you answer that?
Well, it's such a political issue. This sex education is a political issue, and I've become sort of a figure in the movement. And so whichever way I answer, it affects the issue. And it's about sex education, not about me. So if I were to say, yes, I've had sex, people say she's lost her morals, she's not genuine. If I were to say, no, I haven't, they would say, well, then she's hypocritical. And so I don't answer that. Not even my friends really don't know, because it can become such a political issue. And this is about sex ed, not about me.
You know, a lot of people sometimes, like, maybe from your world, like, more Christianity, so they look forward to, like, having sex with their husband and waiting and having that wedding. And, like, you have something, like, look forward to, you know what I mean? But with me, I'm kind of not like that. Like, being from where I come from, marriage is not really important, shall we say. A lot of my friends are having sex, you know, like, I'm having sex and stuff. And I'm not married, and you know what I mean? It's not something that's, like, oh my God, I'm gonna die if I'm not married, or oh my God, like, and I know, like, I need to have safe sex and all this stuff. So the whole ceremony thing, me watching that, the whole thing, the only thing I was wondering is, like, is that something she was looking forward to, like a wedding or something?
You know, it's funny. I'm not one of those girls who's ever planned my wedding. I have never really had that huge desire to get married. The ceremony for me was about being one of about 100 girls in my youth group who were basically told, not explicitly, but we knew that if we didn't take this pledge, it would be us admitting that we were sexually active, that we were promiscuous. Mm. And as someone who sang in the choir and taught children's choir and things like that, I felt like it was something that I couldn't do. I was not really informed. We had never really talked about sex. I wasn't, you know, had no interest in sex. And so it was something, it was not what I was looking forward to with that. But when I made that pledge, I have to tell you, I was 15, but I didn't know what sex was. I did not know the actual definition of sex. And so it was no problem saying, well, I'll never do that. It was just something I was supposed to do to be a good Christian. And so I don't think that there is a standard of expected behavior. I think that, you know, sex needs to be consensual. You need to be responsible. You need to be using two forms of birth control. You need to talk about it with your partner. But I don't think that you can set out a blanket standard for everyone and say this is going to work for everyone.
From KRCB in Santa Rosa, we're a voice of youth, your street-level source on this week's midterm election. I'm your host, LaKoya Simmons, joined by
Amanda Wells.
You know, we've been talking about teen slang all along. What word maybe would you apply to her situation?
As we've been talking about kind of throughout the show, and also what I said before about her kind of being against the majority in her community and the school board and things like that, I think the word beef would apply, because she's really clashing against the school's policies and abstinence where she wants education and things like that.
And like your whole community and just like family, you know, like I'm sure the community there in Lubbock, like not everybody was in agreement with her.
Yeah, and if you want to, you know, find out more for yourself, you can go to www.shelbyknox.org and find out more.
Woo! Look at the time. About time to wrap this edition of our show up. So what word or phrases was this show about anyway?
I feel like a couple of words we've been discussing through the show have been beef, as in, you know, Shelby clashing with her community, and also, you know, beef even between Democrats and Republicans and that whole thing in the election. And another word we've been talking about is lookout, you know, from Susan Gorin, and how that applies in the sense that she's really looking out for the youth and looking out for the future.
The word owned, you know, you could say kind of like the Republicans might have got owned by the Democrats because they took over the House, you know what I mean? It's kind of like they just took over what was supposedly theirs, so now they own it now. And then the word down, you know, as far as like being down for whatever it is that you stand for, or whatever cause that you're trying to fight for or just be a part of, you know.
Yeah, but I think there are some concepts that can't really be translated into teen slang and things. Because as my teacher, Mr. Kentenberg, pointed out, there are things in politics that are very different to how teens see and handle things.
Yeah, like I love that, how he was using that in that whole trying to say like there's a black area, like there's a definitely a black area, there's definitely a white area, but then there's like that gray area that's so in between, and you don't really know like if you're going to be this or that. And how he was saying the whole thing about like the younger generation, how when you get younger, it's much more black and white than when as you get older, things become a little bit more grayer because you're growing a little bit and maturing a little bit. And I just, I loved how he was using that, because I think that's something that I could take away from this and use to like break down my concepts or ideas to people.
And I feel like the whole gray area kind of relates to the whole idea of what politics is, how it's just kind of this series of weird compromises that you have to make and make sure that you're still having some of your own opinions and beliefs, but also relating to the people who are voting for you and the people you're working for, the American public. So what compromises do you feel like that you have to make in life?
Too many to name, that's for sure. But I don't know. I got to make compromises with people, you know, as far as like, you know, like maybe you hung out with a certain crowd or something like that. But now wherever you're trying to go in your life, hanging out with that crowd or whatever is really not going to get you there. So you got to come to like a compromise with yourself and with that crowd of people. So it's like you guys can reach like a center, like a meeting point where it's okay for you to like go on outside of that circle to be who you feel that you need to be, but still be connected with those people who like made you who you are. Yeah, this world and life is just full of compromises, I feel.
And it's necessary to make them. Like,
yeah.
you can't be completely like staunch in your opinions and everything like that, because
it's not going to work like that, because not everybody is thinking like you or on that one way track like you.
And finally, in order of compromise and balance, how do you feel about not voting and letting these people in and hearing what they had to say, LaKoya? Anything change your mind?
I'm definitely taking into consideration what Mr. Kittenberg said. You know, it's because like, you just because there's all these like propositions or things to vote on or people to vote on doesn't mean you have to vote on all of them, you know, just vote on what's like affecting you or what you feel and that you need to be a part of, which is interesting because I can look at it now like, yeah, I don't got to vote on everything. Just vote on what I'm familiar with or what's affecting my life, I feel. But as far as like going out and vote, like, oh my God, I'm going to go vote now. I'm not completely sure. Well, on that note, this is Voice of Youth signing off. Thanks so much for tuning in, and we'll be back at you next week. So mark your calendars, same time, same place, on your dial.
Good night, listeners.
Peace out.
At the starting of the week, at Summit Talks, you'll hear them speak. It's only Monday. Negotiations breaking down. See those leaders start to frown. It's Sword and Gun Day. Tomorrow never comes until it's too late. You could be sitting.
Well, we hope you've cozied up to our current comprehensive teen take on present-day politics, and that you'll be back with us next week as we call across the country to get the 411 on Tennessee's tumultuous Senate race and replay an interview in which our new Attorney General asks his Voice of Youth interviewers how would they like it if he stole their shoes. This and other hypothetical and all-too-real scenarios next week on Voice of Youth, Election 06, Part 2. To get in touch with us, call 707-584-2017 or check us out at your favorite community radio website, krcb.org.